Okay, guys, let me tell you what I want to try and achieve. There are a few little crib sheets going around. If anyone didn't get one, here, take one of these. There's nothing magic in anything that I'm going to say today. There's no reason to say that I have the only way of doing things. The way I do my source sheets and prepare my shiurim is not necessarily any better than anybody else's. But people have said that they like the organisation, and I'd like to share with you the way I do it. Now, obviously, everybody's different, and I'm a product of my upbringing. I was given a legal education, and therefore I approach things a little bit like a lawyer. I have a brain that works in that way, and I structure things in that way, and maybe that's something to do with it as well, but not necessarily. Let me tell you how I first got into this. I was first approached when I was about 26. I was living in Hendon. I was married with a couple of kids. I was approached by a group of guys. I'm sorry, Mark, I have no more little sheets. We'll have to share with somebody. Someone's there. You have to just look over someone's shoulder. I'll do you one afterwards, okay? You need a chair as well if you're going to be there. So I was about 26, 27 years old, and a group of guys approached me in Hendon and said, would you give us a shiur? The guy who used to give us a shiur went on Aliyah and made Aliyah, and we don't have one to give us a shiur. And I said, like me, give a shiur? Like, who am I to give a shiur? I'm just a guy in Hendon who is a lawyer. I don't give shiurim. So I went to speak to one of my rabbeim, and he said to me, no, on the contrary, it's good for you to give a shiur. Bless you. I don't have another sheet. You'll have to just listen for now. And I worked it out over time and energy and different experiences and different experiments, what worked and what didn't work. And really from there, I ended up giving more and more and more shiur. And I gave this shiur to these guys in my house. My Rav said it would be a great opportunity. They want to hear from a peer. It would be good for me to prepare stuff, even though I'm not a Talmid Chacham. I'm not now, and I certainly wasn't then. Nevertheless, it was very, very, very extremely good experience. Bless you. And again, bless you. And again, bless you. There's going to be a regular. Would you like a tissue?
Yeah.
I think you might need one. Okay. Fine. So, over the last 20 years, really, I've been preparing shiurim of different types in different ways and speaking to different audiences. I've spoken to people from all different walks of life, completely secular people. I've spoken to non-Jewish people, given shiurim to non-Jews as well, by mistake, it must be said. I gave a shiur in Purdue University in Indiana. The guy who would organize... like a chicken.
Okay.
Okay, fine. I'll take your word for it. And the guy who organized the shiur had basically got it authorized by the theology department of Purdue University, so people got points or credits or something for coming. So the entire shiur was filled with completely non-Jewish people in the theology department. I was talking about how the Jews kept their Jewish identity through the years. It was meant to be some kind of Kirov thing. And in the end, I spoke to a room full of really fascinated, but completely not Jewish at all. One. Yeah, so that was for him. Anyway, so I've spoken to young people, I've spoken to old people. The only crowd that I find it really difficult to speak to is high school kids. If you want tips on how to engage high school kids, then don't come to me. Because I've had some extremely nightmare, please will the floor swallow me up now experiences. Teaching groups, rooms full of, especially boys, like 14, 15 year old boys, sitting there kind of going. And you're teaching and you're getting no body language, you're getting no feedback, you're getting, and I just can't do it anymore. So that's not for me. I couldn't be a high school teacher for all the tea in China, as they say. But with adults, I seem to be able to connect with people and older people as well. So let me tell you what I want to do. You are young adults. At least some of you are. Anyway, some of you are by the end of the year, and some of you used to be at the beginning of the year, but have now regressed to be children, but you know, whatever, I take it whatever it is. Let me tell you what I've divided this into, and I want to do one and two today and three and four next time. I think there are four stages in preparing a share, and again, this is just my opinion, I don't think it's magic. There's choosing what to speak about. That's a very important part, perhaps the most important part. If you pick the wrong kind of thing for the wrong kind of audience, you're lost. You have to know what people are going to want to hear and what's going to go well. Then how are you going to find the sources? Where are you going to look? Where are you going to research to find which sources to include? Three is how are you going to learn those sources, which we'll talk about next time. And four is how are you going to physically prepare a source sheet? And I may even do a PowerPoint with, like, get my computer out and show you my CD-ROM and all that kind of stuff. See how I do it and how other people do it. I may not. It depends on what's going on. It's on Thursday and I don't have that much time on Thursday. Fine. Let's just breeze through some of these topics. How do you choose a concept or a topic? So first of all, I put here, know your audience. Very important. Are they beginner or are they advanced? Do they have Jewish knowledge? Some intelligence and learning skills could be very different. For example, take a college campus group, okay, which have good intellectual skills but very little background, versus a high school that may have lots of background but very little intellectual skills. Of the early days, Shul Balabatim, who may be a mixture of all of these, they're all very different crowds. Therefore, just assess at the beginning what kind of strengths and weaknesses your crowd has. There's no point doing a Lomdus share to a group of people who are not interested and have no background in Lomdus. I found this out to my detriment. I came back from yeshiva when I'd been in yeshiva for 3 or 4 years, all fired up, and gave a Lomdus share to a group of Balabatim in London. It was disastrous. Disastrous. I could feel it in the first 10 minutes. Because they're not interested. A Lomdus, like, you know, a brisk, a hakira, a classic yeshiva Lomdus, like what Rabbi Berzin does so well in that sense. Like, they're just not interested. They didn't want to hear that. What do they want to hear? So understand what presses people's buttons. This is very important. There are certain issues that people get excited by. Now, sometimes you can't always do that. If I have to teach Hilchas Mukhsa in Shabbos, so like, I have to teach it. Look, you're here for the year. I have to teach you all the stuff. But if you're giving a one-off presentation, know what gets Balabatim excited. What do they want to hear about? Know what gets seminary girls excited. What do they want to hear about? It depends on the back to the bassoons again, eh? Malka, back to the bassoons again. Forget it. Back to the bassoon. Okay, fine. Private joke. Know what not to talk about. Know what not to talk about. Some topics people get very upset by. Okay? Even if you think it's shtuyot, just be aware of that sensitivity. If they're a very modern crowd, there are certain positions that they don't want to hear. If they're a very Haredi crowd, you know what's going to get them all upset. On the other hand, I'm a bit cheeky. I like to push at the edges of people's comfort zone a little bit, because that gives you get a little bit of feedback. Meaning, just to play to the gallery, meaning to tell them what they all want to hear. So that's great. To get them all upset so they hate the shir is not good either. But to do somewhere in the middle, I think that is the sweet spot. Did they say that? The sweet spot, that little bit where they're just at the edge of their comfort zone and they're engaged, but they're still willing to hear what you're saying. Nobody wants to hear fluff anymore, especially not women. Now, I don't think you'll ever be guilty of this, but so many rabbis are guilty of this. They can give a content-driven, very exciting shiur to men. They can walk out of the door, give a shiur to women, and it's a load of fluff and nonsense. Why is that? Because of some preconceived notion that that's what women want to hear. I don't think they ever wanted to hear that, and I certainly don't think they want to hear that now. You know something? Even people who don't mind hearing fluff, they don't mind hearing content either. So you can't go wrong with content, but you can go wrong with fluff. If in doubt, talk up to people, never down to people. Overestimate their abilities. Leave them thinking at the end of the shiur, I didn't really catch all of that, it was a bit fast for me, but whatever. That's better, that's not ideal, but that's better than, oh, he just talked down to us, it was so condescending. Like, who does he think we are? You've all been to shiurim like that, or heard people who've been to shiurim like that. You're better off if you're going to get it wrong, getting it wrong by aiming too high than aiming too low. Because people aren't going to be upset if you aim too high. They're just going to say, I wasn't on the level to hear the shiur. Unless you completely go over people's heads, in which case they'll say, he didn't understand who we were. So too advanced is not good, but it's better than too basic. So know your audience. Know your time slot, okay? Everything, and here's a guide, if you've ever done a mishmar, you probably know this, everything takes longer than you think it's going to take. Okay? You prepare a shiur and there are like 40 sources, and you only get through 9 of them. because you misjudge the fact that actually, you know, it takes an hour to get through these sources. Are people going to ask questions? Goes both ways. If they don't ask questions, you need a lot more material. If they ask a bunch of questions, if they're very talkative, noisy people, then you're not going to get through the material. You have to know how much time you've got. What can you communicate in 5 minutes, 20 minutes, 60 minutes? Sometimes you can communicate the same topic in 5, 20 or 60. You'll just have to do it differently. You know, if you wanted me to give you an overview of Hilchos Muktzah in 5 minutes, I can do that. I can do it in 20, I can do it in 60, I can do it in 18 shiurim. But you just have to know what slot you've got and how you're going to present that. Don't try and give a 60-minute shiur in 5 minutes. I've seen people try to do that as well, and that doesn't work. Source sheets, here's my advice, is only helpful if you have 20 minutes or more. If you have less than 20 minutes, the source sheet's just a distraction, and by the time you've given it all out, and it's not going to work. It's not helpful. I've seen rabbis give droshes in shul, which a drosha is like a 15-20-minute slot, and give out source sheets, and it just looks weird. You know what I mean? Like a Shabbos morning drosha. Oh, I've prepared a source sheet for everybody. Everyone's looking at after shul shiur, that's fine. But giving shul sheets to balabatim as part of the drosha, they just get like, excuse me, my cholin's turning off in whenever it is. How long can your audience focus? The older you are, the longer you can focus. My ideal audience for a long complicated shiur is 70 plus. These 75-year-old women, they are, and they can sit for hours and hours, and there's nowhere else to go. No, but I'm serious, they've got concentration. You know, so a group of people. No, they're not falling asleep on the whole. It's important, you know. They're whatever. But young people find it very hard to focus, and the younger they are, the harder they find it. You know, teaching people 10 years ago in seminary was different to teaching people now. I teach material now in MMY that I used to teach in other seminaries that now I wouldn't have a hope of teaching in those other seminaries. Interestingly.
What do you mean?
Meaning that people who were on a lower academic level used to be able to focus more, and now I wouldn't have a hope of doing that because they're just not...
What did you used to teach
MMY? Well, I didn't used to teach in MMY. So I've had to kind of move myself to the group of people who still want to hear the stuff. I don't know what I'm going to do in 15 years, so we'll worry about that then. Okay, what topic? Let's talk about this. What do you pick to... If you have to give a Dvar Torah, if you have to give a Shia, what do you pick? Okay, first of all, something you're interested in. You can't speak about something you're bored by. It will be communicated very quickly. But will it interest other people? You know, I've been to Shir in the Sheva Brochos of some yeshiva guy who's fascinated in the Sugi in Sanhedrin he's learning. And he stands up and starts talking about the Arba Mises spaced in, like he's Silas Nefer. A Sheva Brochos. Okay. Because sometimes yeshiva guys are so wrapped up in what they're learning, they don't realize that nobody else is in the slightest interested. I've also, you know something? Here's a comment on society. Tell me if you agree with me or don't. Many people, I say most people, when someone starts giving a Dvar Torah, they expect to be bored. And they kind of just immediately kind of turn off. Because, you know, especially, and this really upsets me, if you're giving a Dvar Torah in a mixed environment, in a separate environment where men and women are sitting separately, which is fine, but there's a big mechitza, and the women can't see you. You can't give a shiur to people who can't see you. I refuse to do it. I once went to a vort for one of my students. And she married a guy who was a bit of a frummed out guy, which was very nice. He was a lovely fellow. They had, and I was there to speak about the kala. I was there to give, you know, a chizuk and speak how nice the kala was, because no one else knew the kala. So I arrived there, and I was standing with all the men, and there was like a floor to ceiling, thick curtain. And there were women on the other side of that. So they asked me to stand up and speak. So I said, I'm not speaking. So they said, why not? I said, because I'm speaking to the caller and I can't see her, she can't see me. They said, well, we've got the chitzer up. So I said, I'm not speaking. So eventually they said they didn't know what to do. So I said, oh, I said, I've got an idea. So they said, what's the idea? So I went to the curtain and I went... So I went to the front. I said, now I'll speak. Okay, I never got asked back to speak there ever again. But women obviously cannot be interested in the shiur that they are not connected with. They're behind the mechitza. Mechitza means they're not part of the shiur. You ever had this thing when the men are giving, someone's giving the shiur, and the women are talking, and it was going, Well, of course they're talking, because they're standing behind a curtain and they're not connected. Why would they not talk? It's not, obviously, it's not for them. So just be careful that you're interesting other people. How do you choose? Something maybe you heard in another share that could interest you, but will it transfer to this audience and this time slot? If you heard a fantastic London share, again, by Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, that took 4.5 hours, and someone says, can you give a Shalos Sudas Dvar Torah? It might be great, but it won't transfer. Here are good things to talk about. Inyani Diyoma, lovely. People always like to hear about communal events, current events, world events. Obviously, if it's that time of year, you know, you can talk about Pesach in March. You can't really talk about Pesach in October. People just turn off. People are not that interested, okay? But does it translate? It's all very well. Inyani Diyoma, there's a current event. Somebody had an exciting thing happen. Can you make that into a shir? Does it translate into Makorot, etc.? Use other people's presentations I put here to give you inspiration. That helps you choose a topic. If you just don't know what to speak about, look for Divrei Torah on the web, look for good sources from articles, know where to find juicy stuff. We're going to talk about that shortly. Using classic Mefarshim for inspiration is very difficult, only if you're really comfortable. Meaning, if you're trying to choose a topic, and you say, well, let me open up a Chumash, Rashi, Ramban, and see if there's anything that's interesting to talk about, I don't think you're going to have success with that. Because how are you going to find from the whole of those Mikras Gedolos a topic which you're going to be able to turn into a Dvar Torah? It's going to take you a long time, and only if you're really comfortable running through Rashi and Ramban, etc., I think that's going to be very hard otherwise. And also you might need to read a lot of stuff before you find something that you think might be even the slightest interesting or suitable. When I'm sitting through with a Chumash on thinking about what to give as a Dvar Torah on the Shabbos table, I can sometimes read like for ages before I find anything that might be even remotely interesting. As opposed to if you go on a Dvar Torah site somewhere, you see what Rabbi Sachs says about something, and then you can use that as a base for a topic, and then it's not just plagiarism. You can do that, it's fine. Don't just say, you know, print off Rabbi Sachs' Dvar Torah and read what he says, but use his idea as a kernel, as something to think about, and build around it, and then present it. That's much more successful, usually. Is it cheating? I don't think so. I don't think. Is it secondary sources? Yeah, but that's fine. Yeah. What do you mean a Parsha Dvar Torah?
You're giving a Dvar Torah on the Parsha.
Well, first of all, let me give you a hint. If you're giving a Dvar Torah on the Parsha, always start from the end of the Parsha.
Yeah, you're right.
That's tip number two. Like, always look at the end of the Parsha. Meaning, how many Divrei Torah do you know on the first Rashi in every Parsha? You know? No one ever gets to the end of the Parsha. If you start speaking about things at the end of the Parsha, people will come up to you and go, I never heard that before. That's so interesting. Yeah? I love it when people come up to the end of the shir and say to me, I've been going to shirim for 50 years. No one ever said that before. That's really exciting because you know you've added some value, as opposed to, you know, let's talk about, you know, the first question of Rashi and Bereishis, which is great. Actually, you could talk about that for ages. And I broke my own rule. I gave a shir this Shabbos in where I dwell in Harnoff. Right, for now anyway. And it was based off the first Rashi in the Parsha, which is like not what I normally do, but I said a bunch of stuff that no one had ever heard before. So, how do you find a Parsha Shir Malka? I'll tell you. First of all, what I would do if I were you is I'd roll around on some of the websites. I'd look at Rabbi Sachs' Covenant Conversation. I'd look at the VBM Torah. We'll talk about some of these websites soon. I'd look at yutorah.org. I'd look at the OU website, look around and see what people are talking about. Aish is good, Chabad is good, and don't just repeat what they say, but use their ideas to help you to, oh, that's an interesting idea, now I'm going to research that. Again, we're talking about choosing a topic now, we're not talking about delivering that Dvar Torah. But I don't think that's a problem. You don't have to just open a Chumash and then hope for inspiration. That's going to be really hard to do. Yes?
How do you actually get real position and not just generate
I'm not sure that you have to give real chidushim. I think you have to present in a clear, succinct, structured way an idea, preferably one that people don't hear about very often. And I don't think it has to be a chidush. Most people don't know most Torah. So it'll be a chidush to them.
But why don't you go to the school?
I can guarantee you, you don't have to be a personal machadesh to say things that people haven't said before. If you want to be a machadesh, then you're in interesting territory because you're saying, I read the Parsha and I think it means this. Well, that's interesting, but do I really care what you think? I don't expect people to care what I think the psukim mean. Like, I, Anthony Manning, read the posuk, and actually, I think he's talking about... Like, I wouldn't give a dvar Torah like that. Some people would, but I don't think I'm on a level to do that. I don't think you are either, usually, yes.
You think you have a fetish, but you don't actually think it's a fetish, but you still, like, can't find a source for it? I would say
something like, you know, it seems to me obvious that it must be talking about this. I'm sure I saw someone, if I did think I saw someone talking about
this. Like, if you, like, have an idea on the part of the question.
Maybe no one else said it because it's wrong. But I mean, you know, I would say like that I wouldn't make a whole Dvar Torah based on that idea, but I would bring it in as a side thing, meaning use something that you can prove, and then say also it occurred to me that I didn't see this anywhere, but it makes sense maybe to say this. Use it for Torah's Epsha. Okay, ladies. Tips. Here's some tips. Avoid politics. It never works. Even if you think that some people will love it, some people will hate it. And then you will leave some people very unhappy. If you're right wing and your audience is left wing, if you're left wing and your audience is right wing, it just doesn't work. My experience, you can avoid it if you want, if you can ignore it if you want, is just avoid politics, because you will leave some people unhappy. Yeah.
The politics, you mean like actual politics, like government?
Communal politics, things that people are upset about, the, you know, government... political issues is not politics. Meaning, if you start banging on about why it's wrong to give land away for peace with the Arabs, like, if you're presenting that topic, at least present it from the different angles rather than give you your political opinions. I'm not sure why your political opinions... It annoys me when rabbis use their positions to give political droshes. I mean, like, you know...
That was the other day.
Yeah.
I realize that what you're saying is so smart because people came out so upset.
Right, and then they miss. They
yeah, he's like, oh yeah, there's this decision going on in America about gay people and like the whole marriage situation.
What? I feel like that's gay people.
No, I promise you, it wasn't. Okay,
there are some
that actually happened.
Guys, there are some topics that if you're very careful, you can. You'll think saying mincha. Who's is this? Okay. Now she's going to think that she's having mincha. Okay, fine. Tip two, we already talked about. Tip three, type right, choose things that people don't normally talk about. I'd say 90% of people talk about the same 10% of information. Talk about something different. You will not find it hard to find. Tip four, you don't have to avoid controversial issues as long as you don't have to present things with the right nuzach. If you're going to talk about homosexuality, which I don't suggest you do, because it's a difficult topic to present. Just know what not to say. Know that the word or the expression that you're going to say is going to lose the whole share, because from now on, all that they're going to remember is that you said X. So the nusach can make a massive difference, meaning the way you present things. I once gave a share about women's issues, and the woman came up to the end and said, "You must have been good at obstacle courses when you were at school, like, because you managed to jump through everything without actually saying anything," okay, which is sometimes good.
A very loyal.
Yeah, it is actually, and that's why I'm saying that my background allows me to talk without, you know, really know what I'm talking about, which is what lawyers do all the time, although they get paid a lot more for it. Okay, guys, page two. So that's how to choose a topic, maybe think about some of those ideas. So you've chosen a topic. But now you think, well, where on earth am I going to find Makarot? What am I going to do? I mean, when am I going to find them? So I'm not talking about how to present the source sheet now. I'm just talking about how to find the actual Makarot. So here are three or four interesting ideas. Number one, articles and essays. Articles and essays are much easier to access than... Do you want some water, by the way? I didn't touch this yet.
Yes.
So you take it before I okay. Articles and essays are much easier to digest than books. Meaning, you say, I want to give a shiur on Zionism. Okay, here are 8 books on Zionism. Like, what are you going to do with 8 books, each of which are 250 pages long? You're not going to be able to do anything, as opposed to a 25-page essay, which you can digest, you can think about, you can use. That is something which is much more realistic. Okay? They have a lot of advantages. They're presenting a self-contained topic in a small, digestible format. They have footnotes, and the footnotes will take you to the Makoros. Meaning, let's say you want to give a shir on surrogacy arrangements in Halacha and Hashkafa. Now, you're obviously not going to start with an open shaft and say, where am I going to look? You're going to find an article by someone like, you know, Rabbi, you know, Apfel or someone else, someone that has already presented this information, and you're going to re-present that article. Now, is that plagiarizing? No, not at all. You're going to use the Makorot in the footnotes. You're going to then go back to the sources and put it together from, rather than working from the beginning forward, you're going to work from the end backwards. That's how you're going to do it, and therefore you're going to have a lot of Makorot, and the footnotes will send you to other articles. If it's a good article, it'll say, if you're interested in this, see the following article. Then you look at that article, and you'll have another 20 pages with its own footnotes, and actually you can go on forever, which is why academics like talking about, you know, less and less. They know more and more about less and less, until they know everything about nothing. As opposed to journalists who know nothing about everything. Okay, so both of them know nothing. Okay, but that is often the way to do it. And by the way, there's so much on the web. I'll tell you in a minute how to find some of it. But there are so many articles on the web. Articles are the best way forward. You want to do a shiur on, I don't know what, pacemakers in halacha. I never have, but let's say you want to. Your grandfather just had a pacemaker fitted, and you're now interested in talking about pacemakers in halacha. So we're going to start. So someone wrote an article in one of the journals about pacemakers in halachas. Okay? Someone wrote an article about gluten-free issues, a great article about 3 or 4 years ago in the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society about all gluten-free issues. That article would be a fantastic series of shiurim. Like, you could give 3 shiurim based on that article and look up all the makorot, present them together on source sheets, and you've got 3 fantastic shiurim on gluten, on gluten allergies. What's that? Oh, because they're a big fan of Chochem, and you and I are not. Okay, so I'm not giving a shiur to Rabbi Alfred Cohen as to how to prepare a shiur, because he's 70 years old and he's a big Talmud Chacham, and where's he getting? He might be also getting it from other articles to some degree.
But then you just basically taking that article.
What's the problem? But that's not a problem. But no one else is going to read it. I've said to people have said to me, "Can you come give me a shiur?" And I've said, "That shiur's on my website. Just listen to the website." And they say, "Yeah, but no one's going to do that. Come and give the shiur anyway." No one's going to read the article. And if they do, Nadeva, the way you present it might be much more interesting to people than just going away reading the article. Yeah, and what you might do is you might find other makorot along the way, which he didn't have there, etc. That's just a start. I'm trying to start you off. What are the problems with articles? Accuracy. Some of them are wrong. Some of them are the quotes are wrong. There may be partial quotes. There may be mistakes in the article. How do you know if the person who wrote it's kosher? Quotes from quotes. How do you know? Can you sniff out the difference between an article written by a conservative rabbi and an article written by an orthodox rabbi? And if you can't, then you need to work out the tools to be able to do that. Okay? I'm not saying everything ever written by a conservative rabbi is inappropriate to read, and everything written by an orthodox rabbi is always right. But you have to be able to sniff it out. If you're using a reputable publication, talk about them in a minute, then the chances are someone else has checked them out. For example, Tradition Magazine. Do you know what Tradition Magazine is?
Yes.
Tradition Magazine, produced by the RCA, they just put their entire archive online free, which is galling because I paid for a 2-year subscription. Okay? Which is fine because I get the books as well and now I have them on the shelf. But now you can get all the articles free. And you don't have to worry if somebody in Tradition the magazine is kosher or not, because the editor of Tradition Magazine in the RCA has already decided that they're okay. Okay? That doesn't mean that everything they ever said is right, but it means that you don't have to worry that you're quoting from some flaky person. Okay? Is the author presenting the whole story? Is there a hashkafic agenda? Everyone has agendas. You may need to read around the topic to get a broader picture. If you're listening to Robbie Berman give a shiur about organ donation, okay, you had him, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's very interesting, but boy, does he have an agenda. Okay? He has a very strong agenda. He won't deny it, right? He wants you to fill out an organ donor card. Therefore, if you use his material, it's a good starting point, and he may point you, but you need to use it as a jumping off board, because you may need to find another article presenting the other side of the equation that's saying all the reasons why it's wrong to fill out an organ donor card, and then you may be able to present a more balanced article, because just using his alone won't give you the whole picture, which I think he's probably going to say, fair enough, it won't give you. So recommended sources. Here are some recommended sources to think about. Tradition I just mentioned. The RCA publication, 1,000 articles, going back to 1965. Some of the most important pieces written first appeared in Tradition Magazine. The Lonely Man of Faith was a Tradition Magazine article by Rav Soloveitchik.
Was that long?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that long. The Lonely Man of Faith is about 40, 50 pages long.
How big is the magazine?
So it depends. It's about, let's say the magazine's got, let's say it's got 200 pages in the magazine, okay, and either it's 10 articles of 20 pages or 4 articles of 50 pages. Depends on what they decide to do. But look at it, browse online. Guys, web browsing, internet surfing, you probably don't call it that anymore, but whatever you call it, can be a very worthwhile Torah activity if you can find where all these things are. Here's another one which we have in the library, the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society. You can't get that. You can't get that in on the web. Why is it confusing? Well, first of all, the Journal of Halacha is edited by someone who is reliable.
But they're very, very, very random topics.
Yeah.
So, again, you...
There's, by the way, every 10 volumes, I think there's...
is a cumulative index. So look in volume 60 at the cumulative index, and you'll know where to find everything, and they have a good job of doing that. So, again, I don't think you have a problem trusting the people. You can choose a topic. And it can sometimes help you to decide on a topic. Just browse through the index and say, wow, that sounds like an interesting shiur. Let's give a shiur on tattoos. Now, giving a shiur on tattoos to a full audience in Teaneck, they're probably not that interested in a shiur on tattoos. But if you're going on a college campus and they want to know about tattoos, everybody wants to know about tattoos. It's a really interesting topic to people. Okay, tattoos. What do you call them?
Tattoos.
Tattoos. Okay.
What do you call them?
One of the most wonderfully predictable things about working in seminary is that even at the end of the year, people still think it's funny that I speak in an English accent.
It's one of the greatest speaking tools.
There's some things that we've gotten used to.
Well, that's because I probably never said the word tattoo for the whole year. Yes, I know. Shall we talk about that for 15 minutes? I said leave. Yes.
A tattoo.
Adele.
Was that a journal that someone put out?
Yeah. So, Tomet, again, Tomet's great. It's all in Hebrew, though, so you have to be able to deal with the Hebrew. Yes, definitely. Definitely. I've mostly put English things on here, but guys, once you can make that crossover into Hebrew, then it opens up a whole new world. And it's not that hard. It took me a while, guys, to have the guts to do web research in Hebrew. But once I started to do that, I realized that the Torah on the web is mostly out there in Hebrew. The advanced stuff. And once you actually will learn how to navigate that, I'll talk more about that in a minute, you'll do a lot better. Chakira, have you heard of Chakira magazine? Very interesting magazine, although it's a little bit of a broader audience, and you've got guys there like Balabatim, very clever Balabatim, putting in articles, but there's a bit more of a hashgafic breadth to it, but absolutely fascinating articles. I wouldn't unreservedly recommend all of them, because some of them are a bit strange, but they're very, very interesting and very, very broadening in some ways. VBN Torah just got a new website, guys. You should be on it. You should know how to get your way around it. VBN Torah, great. It's the Gush. It's the Gush online. And they've got loads translated into English. This person, Karen Fish, who seems to have translated everything under the sun. And I've never met her. I bet she's a pseudonym. I bet she's not really called Karen Fish. But I bet she might be.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I'm always talking about fish. Sorry. Okay. Okay. Guys, we're in the middle of a share and it's been recorded maybe on YU Torah one day. Talking of YU Torah, girls, talking of YU Torah, use YU Torah. Most of the stuff on there is audio, which makes it very time consuming, meaning. How long does it take you to read a 20-page article? 15 minutes? Less. 10 minutes? 4 minutes? Okay, but it's a lot quicker. You skip around. It's a lot easier than listening to an audio shiur. Let me give you a tip. Listen to audio shiurim at more than normal speed. Because you can do this easily on a media player of some kind, because a lot of rabbis speak slowly, and it's irritatingly slow. And if you want to listen to an hour Dvar Torah, if you listen to it at 1.6 or 1.7 speed, it's often totally understandable, and you don't. You just change the. You just and okay. Some rabbis you need to slow down. But some rabbis, I'm telling you, this was a revelation to me. My wife often walks past my office and hears this rabbi, and I'm telling you that some rabbis speak like, it says in Rashi, one of the most fascinating ideas. Like, I can't guarantee that I'm going to live to 300. You know, I need to get through this. So you just put him on double speed and he's fine. If you want, okay. No, you can actually get media players that don't do that. Okay, guys, let's carry on. If you want a longer list of links for articles, you can go on my website, which needs to be updated. I'm sorry, this list needs to be updated. On my links page, there is a list of links, and there is a link on the links page to a PDF document that has 200 links in it to different things. So, although I do need to update it, and I can't guarantee they're all still live, then articles are the way. I found in my career of shear giving that articles produced many, if not most, of the shearim that I have. Somewhere on the, they were the starting point to a further investigation. Next, svarim. Svarim are hard to digest all in one go. If I give you a sefer about whether Israel is reshit smicha gul or teinu, you're going to sit and read that for a long time. It's going to be hard for you to make into a shear. However, there may be a chapter in the book, which is kind of an article within the book, which you can use. There are svarim just of makorot, by the way. They just have makorot in them and nothing more.
I have one. It's called Sefer
HaMakorot. Sefer HaMakorot is one which has been around for a while. No, I don't know. But, ladies, I just need you to focus for a bit. Let me give you four or five good suggestions. There's a set called Contemporary Halachic Problems by Rabbi David Leich. Five volumes. Very good. Very good. Rabbi Ari Enkin is amazing. He lives in Bet Shemesh. He's a young guy. But he produces these svarim with each of which has 100 little mini chapters on interesting topics. And he's got 7 of them. And you could just go through his books and never ever need to go anywhere. He's got Makorot at the end. You just look up all the Makorot. Again, I'm not suggesting you just read out his article. Of course not. But you'll use his article. You look at the Makorot, take it to other Makorot. And you're there. You have a shear. You have 3 shearim. Each of his articles you can send into a 3-part series on whatever it is. And he picks really interesting articles. They've all got different names. Rabbi Ari Enkin. He's a lovely fellow as well. You should buy his books. There's a book called Grey Matter by Rav Chaim Schachter. I don't know how to pronounce it. Schachter. One of them is online. In fact, 2 of them, I think, are online. And the other 2. And they're all on Amazon. Where do you buy Jewish books? The answer is Amazon.com.
They're expensive.
They're not expensive. They are not expensive. I don't know. I tend to find that Hebrew books on Amazon have English transliterated titles anyway, but I get most of my svarim now on Amazon. There are certain good book shops around, but most of the bookshops in America and in Israel, by the way, sell the same old stuff. You know, you go in Feldheim. Most, what is the biggest selling type of Jewish sefer out? Cookbooks for recipes. You know, you go in Feldheim, and you know most of the shop is stuff that's not going to help you. It's a great shop. What's that? Yeah, great. There's a great bookshop in Teaneck, by the way. That's so good. That is one of the best bookshops I've ever seen.
Awesome.
The Judaic Bookhouse, and they also deliver. Guys, go to the YU book sale, forum sale in January. They sell so much. They have the whole Apicorsis table. They don't call it that. They call it something like academic interest or something like that. But it's basically the Apicorsis table there.
And the book sale advertises the biggest
firm
sale ever, and then you go in and you're like, so why you?
Let me give you a piece of advice. If you go to the Mossad HaRav book sale, it's good, but round the corner, which not a lot of people know about, is the Merkaz HaRav book sale, which is actually much better. Even though it's less tourist attracting and all that, they've got so many more sefarim, all in Hebrew, it's all Hebrew, okay? Nothing English there. But if you're into Zionist, Sioni, the Dati Lumi Torah world, the Merikaz book sale has in Merikaz Harav, and it's open to men and to women.
What?
At the same time as they run the Mossad book sale,
right,
they run the Merikaz book sale. But if you go to YU, you can also pick up an interesting husband there as well, because the guys in the book sale, especially the guys around the after crosses table, especially in Diva, you'll find a great guy there. You'll find interesting people there. It's a bit of a shook on all sorts of levels. Come on, you're not going to go to the art scroll, cookbook there, are you? Ladies, shh. Although, of course, there's no mixing allowed at all. You know that famous cartoon in the YU Observer commentator from like a few years ago, was like one YU guy saying to the other YU guy, saying, "Do you speak to girls at the YU Sforum sale?" And the other guy looks like shocked. He goes, "What? There are a Sforum at the YU Girl Sale?" It was a fantastic cartoon. It's one of my favourite ever cartoons. Right, guys, let's go on, please, because I have another page to do in the next 10 minutes. Where else can you find materials? Blogs, websites. They come with a health warning. There's no editing on these things. Anyone can just stick up anything they like and give their own life on the blog. Therefore, you do not have any filter. I don't mean like a web filter for inappropriate websites, but you do not have any intellectual filter on a blog. Okay? And therefore, you need to develop the... some of the blogs are fantastic, some are mediocre, some are complete apicursus. You have to develop some good intellectual filtering skills to work out which are the good blogs and which are the not good ones. And I can help you, and you can go on the list on my website where I try to put things which I think are recommended. Most rabbis these days who produce good shirim have their own websites. I have a list of about 100 rabbis which have got amazing rabbis' websites. Yadiva, am I losing you here? Listen, girls. In all seriousness, there are some fantastic Talmidei Chachamim out there, and I can recommend a few. I put some at the end there, but there's loads and loads, and they've given you all their shirim. They've got their shirim online. They've got their source sheets online. And again, you can't just print off their source sheets and use them for a shir. But if you want to plan, I'm talking about how to find makarot. They're there. They're amazing shirim online from fantastic rabbis from across the spectrum. With what's so funny? I said what?
Rabbis.
I said rabbis again. I'm having a hard day. All right. Let's go over the page. Recommended. It's the word was. Ladies, come on, a little bit of focus. It doesn't help when everything starts with a W, okay? But I won't say W's anymore, okay? Let's talk about general web research. Web research. How do you research on the web? How do you find, leaving aside blogs and websites, so here's some tips. Google is fantastic, but you need to know what you're searching for. And if you put the wrong words in, it won't give you what you need. And of course, it's not always that intelligent. But the range is incredible, and you have to be able to filter a little bit between what is good and what isn't good. Here are two tips. Use web research as a means to collect sources, which you then look up and use. Don't just present as an argument that which you read on the web, because it may be a load of nonsense. You need to look at the sources and check that they're reliable. And like I said before, tip two, get used to searching in Hebrew as well as English. Certainly if it's a phrase, let's say you're researching the concept of mida keneged mida, and you want to give a shir on mida keneged mida. There is no point researching that on web research in Google in English. What are you going to put in? You could do in English, mida keneged mida, and you'll get some good stuff. You'll get some good stuff, but I never tried this, but if you try to put it in Hebrew, mida keneged mida, then you'll get probably a load of really good, completely on the point Hebrew articles, which deal with the issue and probably bring almost all the Makoros. And therefore, just be aware of that. I was trying to research something this week on Google to try and find where it was. I couldn't remember it, and I couldn't get anywhere because I was putting the wrong words in. It was something that said Shmoina Parshias Nemru, and I just couldn't. I was putting Asara and Shiva. I was still not getting the right thing. So Google is useful, but not totally helpful. Although you doing it in Hebrew is very helpful. I put here, spend time browsing and getting a feel for the Torah web. It's much bigger than it used to be, and it's constantly growing. Okay, fine. Lastly, how do you get sources off Torah databases? Now you have upstairs
Bar-Ilan.
Bar-Ilan is good, but it's not the only thing out there. There are tens of thousands of digital Sfarim available if you know where to look and if you have the right tools. First of all, some of them are online, free. There are Torah databases online, and I'll tell you in section 4 next time in the second share where to get them, but they don't have great search facilities. But here, I've given you here 6 or 7, and my links document on my website has more, places where you can find Sfarim online, hebrewbooks.org. 70,000 Sfarim. DAS is amazing, because unlike Hebrew Books, which is in PDF format you can't copy, DAS is in like word-friendly format, and they've got so much there. Have you ever been on DAS.ac.il?
Yeah.
Well, you use they have their own internal search, but Google will often bring that stuff up as well if you search in Hebrew. They have almost all the Sfarim there that you could need. Certainly the basics, Chumash, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, all of that stuff. But they have Rav Kook's Sfarim and a bunch of other stuff as well. Sfarim Online, this funny one, Kodesh.snunit, don't exactly know what they are, but they've got a ton of stuff. Machon Mamre have stuff in English and in Hebrew, which is very good as well. You can buy disk on key things and databases. And they get the longer you leave it, they get cheaper and cheaper. Dafka is a word processing system, which I'll come to on the next one. Okay? The advantages is that they've got great search advantages. The disadvantages is that they're very costly. Okay? And some of them need to be plugged in as USBs all the time. You probably don't need one, is my advice to you. At this stage, don't go out and buy the Bar-Ilan all singing, all dancing database. Because you spend $1,000, like, for what? Most of the stuff that you're going to need is already available free online. Another thing that I would recommend is if you buy these things and then upgrade them all the time, you'll end up paying a lot of money. If you wait like 8 upgrades and then buy it at once, it's often much cheaper. For example, I bought the Bar-Ilan CD years ago, and I've been paying each time they have an upgrade. And I don't know how much I've paid total, but it's a ton. And at the Mossad HaRav book sale, they were selling the recent upgrade for like really cheap, 1,000 shekels. 1,000 shekels? I must have paid like 10,000 shekels over the years. So don't do it stage by stage. Wait till they're all out. I've brought you some recommended databases. There's Bar-Ilan here, which I said you can get quite cheaply. The last one I put, you should just know what it is. There is something called Ozer HaChochma. Ozer HaChochma costs $3,000. But it has every single thing you could ever want. But here's the clever thing. I don't suggest you pay $3,000, and I haven't bought it, and I didn't pay $3,000, but if you know what you're looking for, you can get an $8 a day pass that gives you 24 hours on the full site. So if you're organized enough to save up for one 24-hour period all the things you wanted to look up for the last 3 months but never got a chance to do, then for $8 you've got the whole thing for 24 hours. Obviously they have a week and they have a month as well, but you can actually get access to it pretty cheaply if you know what you're doing. So it's all out there. It's not hard to find the sources. It's not hard to physically locate them. Okay? You just need to know where to look. Again, spend a bit of time browsing around. Next time you want to spend 15 minutes on Facebook without any real tachlis, and there's nothing really to do but look at the stupid videos that the last person posted. Okay? Instead, spend 15 minutes browsing around at the Torah web, seeing what's out there. Not researching, but just looking. Just browsing and seeing how to find stuff. It's like getting to know a new town, you know? A new world. A new neighborhood. I recommend it. So there's a lot out there. Hopefully that's the beginning. What I'll show you next time, if you're interested, is just how to use the word processing systems out there to put together source sheets in a way which makes sense. Like Safari and other things like that. All right, the next time will be only half an hour. This one was a good one. Why did it say...